Welcome to The Wrap, a Warren Averett podcast for business leaders designed to help you access vital business information and trends when you need it so you can listen, learn, and then get on with your day. Time is tight. That's why our advisors have wrapped up today's most timely topics into a podcast with actionable advice. Now, let's get down to business.
Hey, Kim.
Hey, Paul.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm glad to be back for another episode here in season four of The Wrap.
Yeah, these episodes that we've released in season four have really been, I think, super entertaining. Maybe I'm a little biased, but, you know, to shine the light on some really great business owners and leaders and just how they've responded to the pandemic. And I think it's, this one's going to be very entertaining and educational as well. And so super excited to have Luke Holden and Steve Song here with Luke's Lobster. And, you know, if you ever visited New York and or Maine, you for sure have on your bucket list to go to eat some lobster. And so Luke's Lobster is, they first opened in the East Village in New York in 2009, but Luke has a really interesting background in that, you know, after he attended Georgetown University, he was on Wall Street with an investment banking career, and but he the sea called him home, and in 2009 he decided to leave the investment banking career and go back to his family's 40 plus years in the Maine lobster industry and open Luke's Lobster. Wow. And in 2012 they opened their own seafood processing facility, and so really they have two separate business lines, the restaurant, but also the lobster that they, and we're going to talk about this in more detail, but lobster that they distribute to grocery stores and other food providers. And Luke, I mean, he just has an amazing career. He's been in Forbes 30 under 30 and a lot of other things. So we are really excited to have Luke here. So welcome, Luke, to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very much looking forward to this conversation.
And if only our podcast listeners could, if this was only on video, they could get a peek out of Luke's window right now and see his view in Maine, which is amazing. And those of us that are not looking out of our windows at the sea in Maine are very jealous right now. But also with Luke, from Luke's Lobster, we have Steve Song, who is the CFO. So Steve joined in 2016, and before that, he had 14 years of experience with private equity, including JP Morgan and other private equity firms, and he serves on the board of various places in New York, and I think he's going to have some very interesting things to for us to talk about as in terms of how he has kind of navigated the pandemic and decisions that have had to be made running a restaurant in New York during a pandemic, and we all are well aware of how hard it hit New York City. And so I'm really looking forward to, Steve, your perspective. So welcome to the podcast.
No, it's great to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you all both for being here.
And we also have with us Charles Bailey, who is one of my partners in the Atlanta office with Warren Averett, and he leads the retail and consumer practice for the firm. And he has over 20 years of experience with public and private accounting experience. And so I think Charles is going to be able to provide some insights into how franchise and hospitality industry has really been impacted by this pandemic and what companies are doing as a result. So Charles, we're happy to have you on the podcast as well.
Thank you very much. Look forward to it.
Well, Luke, let's go ahead and dive right in. So you want to give our listeners a, you know, a brief overview of your company's missions and operations?
So Luke's Lobster is a vertically integrated seafood company. We've got wharfs up and down the eastern seaboard where we buy lobster, crab, and shrimp directly from our fishermen. And then we bring it into our SQF, MSC production facility here in Maine. And half of our product goes to our own restaurants all across the country and international. And the other half goes to customers like Whole Foods. So what's really neat about this business model is that if you love your experience, your Luke experience, we're responsible for that. And if you don't, we're also responsible for it. There's no middleman between us and the catch and the harvest. So we take great pride in authorship and in making sure that the great harvest of these fishermen and the hardworking effort of these fishermen is showcased through any and all Luke's experiences, whether that's in our shacks, through a consumer packaged good experience where you're buying lobster meat or lobster tails at Whole Foods, or now through our e-commerce experience where you can get a lot of the seasonal catches that our fishermen are bringing to the docks each and every day. So our overall mission is to become the world's most respected seafood brand. We know we won't be the largest, we won't be the oldest, we won't be the highest grossing, but we think that if we really lean into our stakeholder versus shareholder model and really make long-term decisions that value and buoy all of our stakeholders, we have a real opportunity to change the perception of the seafood supply chain and really become the world's most respected seafood brand.
So Luke, tell us a little bit about how the company has been impacted and also adapted in light of the pandemic.
It's been tough. It's been really tough. So a little bit more about the business. We have 10, 11 shacks internationally. So we have 10 in Japan, one in Taiwan, and we had one that was scheduled to open up in Singapore. And all of those markets, as you remember, experienced COVID probably 2 to 4 weeks before we did here in the U.S. So we kind of got a sniff of what was coming early and really felt the impact of our partners. These are all license deals, shutting their businesses down and what that did to their team and their supply chains and just like how difficult that was to actually make those decisions and lead a team through it. So that business for us has gone from something that was very exciting and growing very quickly to really what we're experiencing domestically in the shacks that we wholly own. And it's tough. Like domestic shacks, we've looked at our labor model and we've taken our best and our brightest and turned them into lobster roll makers for now so that we can really drive labor costs down. We've looked at our real estate landlords as partners and those that have been willing to make deals with us. We go and reopen those shacks and try and find opportunities where we can create a little bit of rent for landlords and we can make these shacks operate. But that in itself is just, it's tough. There's not a lot of times in business where like the harder you work, you don't get rewarded. And in this case, sometimes like working really hard is not really going to offer you more opportunity on the backside of this. So that's been tough on the restaurant side, but the team has really rallied wonderfully. And again, through tweaking our labor model and really partnering with our landlords, we've been able to stay. And that's kind of our model at this point in time is stick around till next summer when we historically are a busy brand. And then on the production side of the business, it's been very busy. A lot of standards have had to have been tweaked, and major precautions have had to be added into that production business where we bring 150 teammates under one roof and we turn 40,000 pounds of lobster into 20 different products. So really thinking through the precautions necessary to make sure that there's no transmission of a potential infection within a production facility has been something that's our top priority. Safety's always been our top priority. So we were very successful with that. And then our pivot there really has been just focusing on the grocery side of our business. Last year, we actually won the Global Supplier of the Year award for Whole Foods. So they've been a great partner, great account for us during all of this. And we've just really tried to figure out how to take some of our product lines and that were predominantly for casinos and cruise lines and restaurants, hotels, and repackage those lines into what grocery is looking for. But the volume has been there, and then that ability to go out and compete and work hard and get something to show for it is that exists in that business. So it's been nice to be able to compete there.
There's been a few different crises in my career. So having seen a few of them happen, obviously not to the scale or this kind of health situation, that we're all dealing with. But in all those crises, the companies that survive were not always the ones with the best business model or the best operations or the best team. It was the ones who had the cash available to survive. So knowing that, we were able to kind of pivot quickly to making those tough decisions that we needed to make to kind of prioritize that. So that's been a key theme, and the entire leadership team all kind of bought into that. And we've been fortunate with the subsidies from the government and taking advantage of a lot of different programs to help us, and the landlords have helped us. And rather than treating everything as an adversarial us versus them mentality, I think Luke's comment about the stakeholder theory of just making sure we're doing right by all the people that we're trying to work with and for, just over communicating, hey, it's going to be really tough. Can we get back to you? We're still here. Just make sure people felt like they were heard. And I think that's been critical for us to kind of get through this past few months.
You know, Paul, when Luke was talking about having their international locations that were affected early on, I think back to in early March when we recorded the first of our special series podcast episodes with our client that was Brownlee with Curry & Company. And they are a furniture manufacturer with facilities in China. And they were very first impacted, and we were discussing, you know, what the timeline would be for impact in the United States and impact on the global supply chain. And I don't think even then we could have predicted where we would be sitting in going into the fall here in the United States, that it would have had this level of impact. But some of the things that Brownlee was talking about are exactly what Steve just mentioned, you know, about cash flow being the key, you know, differentiator for the companies that would be able to get through that and could make decisions, right? Could choose to purchase when they needed to and the amount that they needed to based on the disruption in supply chain. So I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point, Kim. You know, the thing that I was thinking about when Steve was talking was the other concurring theme in this season is just, this has been the greatest business equalizer there is, right? So like Steve said, it's not the ones that have the best model or the biggest business. It's everybody's been impacted. So it's equalized everyone almost to the same playing field. And then those that could pivot and could take changes and could be flexible has really flourished here. So Charles, you know, listening to Luke and Steve talk, you know, how does this organization's situation align with what you're seeing in the overall industry and how it's been impacted?
I would say one of the things that the company did that's very impressive, when this hit, there was a brief period where they had closed all of their locations. And management was able, instead of just trying to be short-sighted, they went ahead and made the quick decisions that needed to be made to figure out how to get things back on track. And, you know, I say that because, you know, a lot of companies were slow to react. You know, it was almost like we're going to take a long holiday and we're going to come back. And, you know, for Luke's business, you know, the company between the restaurants as well as Cape Seafood that manufactures, you know, the product, they were able to react quickly. One of the things that they did a good job of was taking care of takeout orders, you know, and things of that nature, as to where that's what was seen a lot with other industries, probably what hurt them the most was just some of their stores are, you know, heavily populated downtown areas, for example, in New York, that were closed. So those, you know, those were more impacted versus the locations in their suburban areas where it was easier for people to come in and get takeout and things of that nature. So they, you know, the company did an unbelievable job in pivoting and being fast to take action.
I appreciate you acknowledging that, Charles, because that was super hard for us. We've been a team for just over a decade now, and you know, many of the teammates that were with Luke's day one, and teammates that have joined us subsequently, like Steve, during the periods of the business's history, we really had to professionalize and grow the business quickly. They're all partners in the business now, which I'm very proud of, and I think that that's been incredibly important during this tough time. But I asked my teammates, my family members, my friends, which in all lines kind of all get blurred together, to just make some pretty crazy concessions as a result of COVID. Senior leadership completely forfeited salary for a period of time, is currently working on anywhere from 25 to 50% reductions on base salaries. And a lot of our teammates are still giving this thing 110% and doing it because we've been able to make sure that we're transparent in the why behind the decisions that we're making, but they're doing it because they understand the why, and they want to be part of the solution because they're part of the Luke's family, they're part of the Luke's organization. And that just made those types of tough decisions, because there was furloughs and there was layoffs as well that were part of that, but it made all of those decisions that were business decisions completely personal decisions as well. So I don't think there'll ever be a month, a 2 month period that was ever as hard for me to manage a team, business, and a group of friends through as that March and April period. It was just brutal.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking the subscribe button now. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Now back to the show.
Steve, that has to have been the most challenging part of your company's experience during this COVID-19 pandemic. Knowing that and knowing how you responded to it, and I would say you still are responding to it, what advice do you have for other businesses that find themselves struggling with similar challenge and are faced with the same type of decisions to make?
As Luke has always told me from day one, you know, this business is all about people. And I think we were aligned that keeping as much of the team together as possible was priority number one. And, you know, as Luke mentioned, as soon as we realized and got on board that cash conservation was critical, the senior leaders, the top six or seven people, all just laid down their salaries and said, all right, we'll just take zeros and make sure people have some stability and continuity. And then as this got a little further, we realized, you know, we need to make more asks of people. And the senior leadership team beyond that basically sacrificed even more of their salary. And one interesting way to look at it is every person that did something like that saved somebody else on the team that was, you know, still able to be a part of the team because of that. And I think that kind of culture I had never seen before in any other organization I've been a part of, where literally senior leaders are taking, you know, zero salary or, you know, 50% cuts so that other people can kind of stay on the team. And I think that was appreciated, recognized, and that is kind of why the team that is remaining is kind of working 110%, because they know that that's kind of the culture that we want to keep and preserve. I had a lunch at one of our shacks the other day. One of our general managers, Frankie, is explaining how challenging it's been for him and working so hard, and his you know, family and, you know, partner. And I asked, you know, what are you doing? You're working so hard. And he said, I have to do my part to save this company. And to hear that from, you know, someone in our shack running a, you know, working on their feed 12 hours a day and just feeling like they have a sense of duty to this organization is just so heartwarming. And I think that's why we're able to kind of get through this.
That means that you've clearly done your job leading up to this point and building a culture where people buy into, right, you're not having to tell them or get them on board to understand that they have a vested interest. They feel that. And I think as a leader, that's what we all strive for, right? Is that our team would feel that sense of ownership and responsibility. And I think that speaks so well of your team that has been the response. So I think that's something very, very positive to take away.
I would agree with that, Kim. You know, in retail, before I was an accountant, my entire family was in retail. And I always thought over the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, loyalty to brands and companies have somewhat slipped, and it's because we're commoditizing a lot of things. And one of the best things I hope that comes out of all of this is stronger relationships and then just stronger loyalty to the human aspect of business. And I think that's where I hope that's where things go. And it sounds like everybody on this team is really there. And so that's really promising to see. Charles, you know, what other insight do you think other organizations can glean from this company's story?
But before I answer that question, I want to follow up with the comment you just made about human relationships. You know, my wife and I love to eat out. And so to your point, it's about building relationships. We were in a restaurant one night about a month ago, and the patron asked how many people are working tonight. And they said, we've got 12 on staff. He pulled out $240 for the tip when his meal was less than $100. And that says a lot that people do care. So it gets back to your point about relationships. I think in terms of, you know, for other organizations to be able to learn from what Luke's has done successfully is, one, you know, the company took for Cape Seafood, who was so focused on B2B, now then they stayed hyper-focused on B2B, but they also added a B2C element to it and really sent a lot of social media out to take advantage of, you know, B2C services because people were at home now and people still want to eat. They want to eat out. And so they were able to take advantage of that. The other thing I would say, if restaurants have not, I hope to goodness by now, at this point, we're so far into the pandemic that they have taken advantage of either home delivery or takeout orders, because that was something that, you know, while you came into one of the shacks to have lunch or dinner, you could either dine in or take the food out. But, you know, that model got changed for the period there where we couldn't dine in at all. And my concern is, you know, if you haven't figured out how to get through this first wave, my personal belief is we're going to have a second wave. And so you really need to figure out what your game plan is going to be to get through the second wave. And I think that Luke's have done a great job of doing that.
So, Luke, what do you feel like your key takeaways, and maybe it's a personal experience or with the business, but what key takeaways are going to stay with you for years to come and the impact the way that you lead your business?
Well, to riff a little bit on what Charles was just saying, I've always been a pretty optimistic entrepreneur. If there's a problem, we can solve it. And if there's any desire and will, we'll figure it out. But I think while I suspect that that'll never change about me, and I really hope it doesn't, what this pandemic, what this crisis has taught me is the concept of the Stockdale paradox, and that's really what Charles is talking about. Like when you're looking at a crisis, when you're looking at a problem, you need to live in the reality of it, and you need to make decisions that are grounded in reality, and not be overly optimistic. And I think often when, as humans, as leaders, when we're under stress, we often fail to make decisions in a timely manner because we think that there's just more data that's going to come, when in actuality, we should make a decision based off the data we have today, because you have enough, and anything else that comes in tomorrow is ultimately probably not going to change the answer. You need to live in the reality of your current situation and make the best decision you possibly can. And then it's really just like how you lead people through that decision, especially during a moment of crisis. So I've definitely got more battle wounds to show as a result of this pandemic, this crisis, but I think it definitely has matured me as a business leader.
I think for me, I've drawn a lot of parallels between, you know, I have a young daughter and, you know, Luke has two girls as well. Just, you know, being a leader of a company and being a parent have become very analogous to me. And just recognizing, you know, the uncertainty, helping your team focus by not getting too much anxiety about things out of their control. You know, that's for, you know, Luke and me and the other leaders to deal with. The rest of the team should just kind of focus. And while transparency is nice, at the same time, I think there's not much that they can do with that. So to burden them with additional worries and concerns is probably counterproductive. And, you know, playing that delicate balance of being transparent but also supporting an end outcome, I've learned is kind of a very important thing. Because next to the word unprecedented, I don't think I've heard the word anxiety more used than this time period. And it just seems like that is just going to be here for a while. And how do we as leaders kind of help our teams kind of cope with that?
One of the things I heard recently in a leadership talk was, in the absence of certainty, clarity is the next best thing. And so in this environment, none of us can lead with certainty, right? We don't know what's coming next, but we can provide clarity to our team around what our vision, what our goals are, and be very clear with that. And that then provides a sense of calm to your team, because if they're feeling uncertain and the messaging is unclear, that provides nothing stable for them, right? And so I think that's very true as a parent of three myself, right? I'm not certain about what's happening, but I can be really clear on the goals and the vision for our family and how we'll respond to this.
And I think one of the things that Luke and the team and we all did very well is we set out a plan that, you know, this is back in April 1. We said, all right, May 22nd, May 23rd, we're going to plan to reopen. And if we need to adjust, we'll adjust then, but let's work towards that. And, you know, here's when we're going to go back to the office. We obviously did not have a crystal ball and things kind of lined up very well, but I think having that clarity and certainty gave people a lot of comfort that there was a plan in place, and we were able to be flexible, but at the same time, it anchored them to something as opposed to just drifting and taking it day by day with no real sense of where we're going or what's going to happen.
So Luke, what does the future look like for your businesses? I mean, as you move forward, what is going to be different or what's going to be the same?
Well, something new, something fun. We did start an e-commerce component of our business during the pandemic, and it's been fun. It's been extremely successful. It's been a new challenge for the team, and ultimately, as we've been talking about, one of the biggest challenges is just keeping a team together and motivated. And when you can string wins together, that ultimately creates good momentum and good team motivation. So e-commerce for us has been a little bit of a rocket ship, and we're hoping to continue to grow and energize that business post the pandemic. And I think the other bit too, that Steve and I are trying to get our capital structure organized and ready to take on, is there's going to be an incredible amount of opportunities that we're even starting to see them on the restaurant side of the business to lean in the direction where everybody else is kind of fleeing at this point in time. People will come back to restaurants, and tourism, domestic and international tourism, will come back. And I think a lot of those assets in particular right now are impaired. So for us to put a growth plan together and execute against it by having the right team and capital structure in place is something that we've been hard at work at, because we just think there's going to be an awesome opportunity to be growing that component of our business when the time is right here.
So Charles, what advice would you give to organizations as they approach making future plans for their businesses?
Well, as you've listened to this podcast, I want to share one thing that has echoed throughout the entire conversation, and that is culture and loyalty. And when I say that, if you listen to this whole conversation, that's what's been driving most of this conversation. And when I say loyalty, that goes in both directions between the employers and the employees at Luke's. You know, the company has removed those two E words. And if you've listened to everything that Steve and Luke have said, they've used the word team. It's not an employer and an employee relationship, but it's a team relationship. And I say that, you know, in the very first time I ever went to Saco, Maine to do the audit for Cape Seafood, I remember listening to a CEO sitting in his office, because we were in a very, if you've not been to the Saco, Maine office, it's small. At least the office is. The manufacturing part is large, but sitting outside on a card table and doing our audit, I heard a CEO on the phone. You couldn't help but overhear him because we're all so close together. And sit there I couldn't hear the other side of the conversation, but I could tell it was talking about the company and sales. But the question that got put to Luke was something in the order of, how are things going? And his response was, instead of saying sales are up, this is up, his words were, it's been a great week for us. We've had enough production that we're able to work everybody 4 out of the 5 days. And that says a lot. you know, I wish more CEOs thought like that and realized that he cares more about his people. And I was on a webinar this morning earlier, and that's one of the things they talked about. It's a circle. You take care of your people will take care of you. It's a circle. Which one goes first? And so I have to tip my hat to these guys. And so for organizations out there, you know, that's something that if you don't have that culture, maybe listen to this podcast again and, you know, maybe get some stuff from that to help you implement some culture. One of the things I do want to share that was interesting, I was on a different webinar this morning, and Luke and Steve, you can appreciate this. 41% of consumers want to go out and increase their diet with their seafood, So that, no wonder your e-commerce is rocketing. The other thing that's interesting is 43% of consumers want to go out and get dishes that they can't easily make at home, which I thought was interesting. But in terms of the industry as a whole, I would say this, you've got to focus on the consumer. That's the most important part right now in the dining experience. You know, while restaurant spending is still fairly low, it's still number one when you ask consumers how they would like to spend their dining dollars. They want to get out. They want to go out. You know, they're looking to dine out. It's not all doom and gloom. They want to go. The only thing they care about is they want to feel safe. And so restaurateurs need to make sure they're doing everything they can to make the consumer feel safe when they come in to dine or get food to go. Other thing I would tell people as far as the industry, you know, whatever signs you're putting in your windows regarding the wearing the mask or following the CDC guidelines or seating requirements or whatever safety policies that you're, you know, implementing, take some time to have those signs done professionally. It gives you a little bit of consumer confidence that you just didn't go in the back and take a magic marker and write something and put it up. That's, you know, we've all had enough time to recover, but again, you want to look professional. You know, a lot of grocery stores, a lot of restaurants you go into, they've got signs on the table that talk about seating and things of that nature. The other thing, if you're not using, if you've got dine-in services and you're not using your QR codes and placing them on your table, I definitely would encourage restaurants to do that. This not only save time in cleaning your menus, but also will reduce landfills with paper menus that most places have been using. So that's definitely something good to do. And the last thing that I would comment on is, you know, take advantage of being creative with your workforce. There's been some restaurants that are scared to use third-party delivery services. And so maybe if you have the ability and can use a delivery service using your staff, then take advantage of that. If you are using a third-party delivery service, one of the things I would encourage you to do is get labels made with, you know, your brand on it or whatever your logo is. And when you get the bag pulled together, seal it with that, with that basically the sticker, the adhesive sticker, you know, seal it with that. So that way when it gets to the consumer's home, I've heard some tragic stories about, you know, people open up the bags, looking what's in there, et cetera, et cetera. So that's something I would definitely encourage people to do if you're not already doing that. So those are kind of some of the summary points that I see that businesses need to think about if they're not already implementing them.
Charles, you brought up a good point of wanting to get back out and dine. I remember as soon as the restaurants opened up in my area, we had the advantage of somebody coming to watch our children. And my wife and I went and we got takeout and we literally sat in a parking lot next to our car. We took our chairs and we just sat outside. It was probably one of the best outside dining experiences I've had, but the moon was high. And it was just one of those things where we were happy to have some sort of normalcy, right? And so that to me was a lot of fun. And yeah, you're right. People do want to get out and really feel somewhat normal again. So gentlemen, here on the wrap, we'd like to wrap it up in 60 seconds. You know, what is that one thing you want the listeners of this podcast to walk away with from your story and your discussions within what we've had today?
For me, it's really treat people the way you'd like to be treated and offer them the why behind the decisions that you're making and be grounded in reality. You know, keep that eternal optimism, but have your decision-making be grounded in reality, especially during a moment of crisis, and just keep your people together because there's nothing more important than people.
And I obviously echo that, but to add a different piece is you can never plan for these types of situations, but you can set the groundwork to be, as Charles mentioned, have a culture where people will be loyal and be leaders that will be clear and make decisions, and all that stuff will allow you to endure these things, because it seems like every 7 to 10 years there's something that happens. We can't predict what it'll be, but I think if you just build this foundational trust in your team, then I think you'll be well positioned to survive.
Luke and Steve and Charles, this has been a really great conversation, and I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your schedules to be with us and to share your experience and your advice. And I know that there will be listeners that will, you know, walk away hearing what you've done and be able to be better prepared for decisions that they're facing. So thank you so much. And yeah, I'm looking forward to ordering some lobster and having it delivered to Atlanta.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Paul. We appreciate being included in your podcast very much.
No, thank you so much for having us. It's really an honor to be a part of this. Thank you.
And that's a wrap. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a review on your streaming platform. To check out more episodes, subscribe to our podcast series, or make a suggestion for other topics to cover, visit us at warrenaverett.com/thewrap.